Coming up next is the Professor James McCanny Science Hour at the Crossroads. Now on shortwave, WWCR, frequency 5.070 at 7 p.m. Eastern on Thursdays, and also on Reality Radio Network Internet at www.realityradionetwork.com on Thursday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. And now, once again, here's your host, the Professor.
Good evening. August 3rd, 2006, and what a very special night this is. The first airing of this show on the shortwave station WWCR 5.070, 5070, or 5070 as some people say it. Shortwave, tremendous amount of power, 100,000 watt station, and heard by people around the world, a great addition to my show, which was already heard around the world on the internet station and previously also on the satellite downlink. Many other special things going on for me personally on this day, August 3rd, 2006, but be that as it may, I have a very difficult task tonight because there are many new listeners, many people who possibly have not heard me before, and in addition, there's the regular audience who is well-versed in my material, understands quite well what I'm doing, so it's going to be a little bit of a juggling act to bring those people up to speed gradually that have not heard me before and still keep the cutting edge, the pushing the envelope for those people who understand my message and have been listening for years. Just to summarize for those new people in one brief statement, the electrical nature of the universe, that's something I've been studying and promoting for decades with my research. I have a master's degree in physics and decades of publication. I began publishing in the astrophysics journals around 1979 and found that the things I was saying were not exactly popular or well received at that time. But as the years and the decades progressed, it seems that everything I was saying back then has come true, and a great deal of additional work has come over the decades, such as my weather work, the electrical nature of weather, the driving force behind hurricanes. So the bottom line is most of what you read in the newspapers, magazines, scientific journals, etc., regarding the nature of the cosmos or the workings of the cosmos, our weather, planet Earth, the universe, etc., the majority of standard theories are simply incorrect. So the point being that there's an entire different paradigm or set of theories which I promote, and over time and a bit of study, you'll be able to understand these because I talked to the public directly, which is something that the standard scientific community does not really appreciate. They want to be heralded as the lords of knowledge and you should worship them, and they try to make it sound so complex with their Babylon of words that nobody could possibly understand it. In fact, most of them don't understand what they're talking about. But what I try and do, because of my years of teaching, I've taught at high school level very early in my career. I taught at college and university level for probably half of my career. And then I've been in engineering. I've been in computer development. Been in aerospace. So I've been in many different industrial fields using my background of physics. And in addition to this, I've given lectures and talks. I've been on just a countless number of radio shows, my own radio shows, and also as guest on all of the major radio stations that you would hear around the planet. And I've learned how to talk to the public and bring my message in a clear, concise manner. For many years, I have used the same format for my show, and that is I usually start out with a bit of a health tip, because in these days you simply have to take care of yourself. And if things get rough, which they very well may in the near future, people are going to have to take care of themselves in ways that they've never had to deal with before. So at any rate, I give a little bit of a health tip. A number of years ago, in addition to my scientific work and background, I took some courses, in fact, a few years out of my life, took a part-time with the extra hours of some of my days, and became a licensed, certified alternative healthcare practitioner. And it was something where I wanted to learn for myself to learn how to become healthy and stay healthy, and also to position myself so I could then take that information and pass it along to the public, and it's very important. So you'll find that my show is structured at the beginning. I usually have a health tip. Then I have some news, current events, scientific interpretation of issues that are going on that are current, analysis of issues going on in the scientific community, and I relate this to many issues going on that you might not think are related. For example, politics in the world. It turns out that science is the core, a lot of times, behind what's going on. Just a little example, 99% of all the PhDs in the United States and in Europe work for government contracts in some capacity. That is, they are paid in some form, their money filters through possibly even private corporations or universities, but ultimately that money comes from the government. So there's a very high level of control of science. And the good science I've divided up into, I've talked about the three tiers of science, actually four. And by the way, I do not work in government science. I fund my own research. I do all my own research and in a very ethical and standard manner. And I have done a lot of research. In fact, I probably know more about many of the fields in space science, aerospace, than a lot of the technically astute people that work professionally in those fields for government contracts. Let's put it this way, I've been around the block. But the point is, the majority of science that you read about or see today actually comes from heavy-handed, controlled government funding. But the other thing I want to point out is that there are tiers of science. Some of it you do not see. What you see in the newspaper or on the evening news or in a lot of the science magazines is what I call tier two science. That's what you're allowed to see. It makes you believe that when NASA does something, that's the cutting edge, or those are the top scientists in the world, and it's really not true. Above them and very invisible is what I call tier one science. It's the black ops. The programs, for example, NASA is a front agency. It's not the best science going. In fact, the entire purpose of NASA is to provide a front and do as little as possible and to keep the public from getting their noses into outer space or into the true business of outer space. So there's a lot of understanding that you have to gain to really know what's going on in the world, and this filters up to the controllers of the world, the people that run things. So it's very important to understand who runs the world, how they do it, and how they control scientists. They control scientists with money, with their egos, with publication, with compartmentalization, all types of methods that work very well, except turns out that I'm privy to all of these methods, and I choose to work by myself, and as I said, that sets me out as really the last, what is known in the industry, the last of the independent scientists. When I go to scientific conferences to give talks or presentations, on my badge, when I go into the meeting, it says affiliation, independent scientist. I'm the only one there anymore with that affiliation or designation. All the rest of them belong to Boeing or Goddard Space Flight Center or JPL or whatever. So I have some interesting stories regarding that that sometimes I share on the air. Then just quickly after that, I give, as I said, news briefs, information, current events, and then I go into a major science topic. For example, the science topic of tonight is something that I've needed for a long time on this radio show, and that is a summary, kind of an overview of the electrical nature of the cosmos from the subatomic world up to the largest scales of the universe. So even for people who are avid students of my work, it's sometimes good to sit back and kind of reflect and kind of encapsulate and summarize what is going on, what it all means. And it's also good for the people who are beginners to get somewhat of an overview. So that's the main science topic for tonight. Many nights I will be giving very esoteric topics like the structure of quasars, but I always relate it back to you as a human being back here on planet Earth and how that affects your life. Just quickly then, starting out, the health tip for the week. I've developed some associations and I'm very proud of them. For a long time I encouraged people to get a water filter, a gravity water filter that is, in one that you just pour water in the top and clean water comes out the bottom. Clean, purified water. And I've researched the industry and what I've discovered is that the Berkey water filter is excellent and it's something I recommend that everybody get. And so what I've done is I've put together a package of the Berkey water filter, the Big Berkey, and four filters. Now you can use two filters in the Berkey and then keep two as spares. And a lot of people think, well, that costs extra money. Well, yes, but in an emergency, believe me, if one of your filters for some reason is not functioning, or if you have, say, a larger group of people that need water and you're trying to use the water filter, four filters might be a requirement. So at any rate, my package that I'm offering to the public is the Berkey, the Big Berkey water filter with four filters. And as I said, I really encourage people that those extra two filters are very necessary. You keep them handy. And I use mine on a daily basis. I take water from the tap and I pour it through my filter and I take it camping with me, etc. So it does get used every day. This is something I use. And by the way, when I recommend something on the air, it's because I use it myself. So the Big Berkey with four filters, the price of this is $315, and I developed an 800 number simply because that would allow people to quickly order this, and that 800 number is 800-983-JMCC. And in terms of digits, it would be 800-983-5622. And as an introductory offer, I'm giving free shipping. That's about $18 typically for shipping into the 50 states. And that free shipping is to the 50 states only, by the way. And also, something people are going to need one of these days is an emergency shortwave radio. And in honor and in kind of a gesture, my own personal feeling about this, because I'm now on shortwave, I have used for many years a shortwave radio that is small. It's a small, it's about the size of, it's 5 inches long, it's about a little over an inch thick, and it's probably about 3 inches wide. And this little radio, I've been in the farthest reaches of the world on some of my expeditions, travels, and research travels, and this little radio has been with me, and it's pulled in stations from far and wide, and I've gained a real respect for this. And when I go places, believe me, that little radio is with me. I made a special purchase of these radios, a small emergency 9 band. It has a TV band, it has an AM and an FM band, and then the the full spectrum of shortwave bands, and I'm also going to include that for free to the first, I won't say how many I have, but I have quite a few of these on hand, many, many of them. I made a special purchase of these. So if you purchase the Berkey water filter, which I highly recommend that you do, if you don't have one, I don't care if you live in a high-rise apartment in the city or in the farthest reaches of the country where you have a spring flowing by, I recommend that you get a Berkey water filter. And so as an introductory offer for this show and for the fact that I'm now encouraging people to get the Berkey water filter, I'm including both free shipping and a free shortwave radio. This is a Bell & Howell. As I said, it's called the World Receiver and nine-band radio, and that would be included for free also if you call the 800 number, 800-983-5622. So at any rate, and also I'll be talking in a little while about my books. That's something that the new people should be familiar with. I'll just quickly go through the names. It's The Planet X, Comets and Earth Changes, a book that has become tremendously popular. It explains the science of the workings of the solar system and the cosmos, electrical nature of the universe. That is the theoretical work that I began in the 70s and completed. This book has been around for a long time. It's sold very well, and I encourage everybody to get this because you'll really have an eye-opener. It doesn't just cover science, it covers a lot of the aspects of daily life. And then after that, there was a pamphlet called Surviving Planet X Passage. I'll be talking about that on this show, and then upcoming weeks. The main topic, there is a plethora of topics that are covered in that 60-page pamphlet called Surviving Planet X Passage, but one is how to build a calendar with a pile... Excuse me. How to build a calendar with a pile of rocks. And this is something we find rock calendars all over the world, from Stonehenge to little piles and circles of rocks out in the southwestern desert of the United States, to Bolivia, to the Incas had these. In Zimbabwe, there are rock calendars that are found, ancient rock calendars. And I explain in this little pamphlet how these are built. And in an emergency situation, the first thing you're going to lose is your time and calendar. And I don't care who you are or how avid a timekeeper you are, ultimately you're going to lose a day here, a day there, hour here, hour there. And you're going to lose track of the calendar. The reason you need a calendar fundamentally is to know when to plant and when to harvest. And if you don't have that, you're going to be in big trouble, because a lot of times you have a limited quantity of seeds and you have to know when to plant and when to harvest. So this little pamphlet tells you exactly how to do that. And in a show coming up, a friend of mine suggested this, that I pre-announce this so that people can get the pamphlet and read it. And there are charts that you have to fill out in the pamphlet, etc. And on a show in the future, possibly early in the fall, after enough people have gotten the pamphlet, I will have a special show and actually instruct you on the air while you sit there with a small pile of rocks and start to build your rock calendar. It's a bit complicated, but anybody can do it, and it's one of the most important survival skills that you might have. So at any rate, and by the way, that little pamphlet is only available by mail order, or it's available on my internet webpage, of course, as all of these are, including the Berkey, but the 800 number is only for the Berkey special, the $315 for the Berkey plus four filters, free shipping, and the free radio. But if you want the pamphlet, that's just $5, a very inexpensive investment. Send that to JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, Minnesota 55392. And then The third book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection, and the final book, The Weather Book. I call it simply The Weather Book. It has a bit more complicated title. I'll be talking about those in more detail throughout this show and in the future. I've drawn a box, and I suggest that everybody get a piece of paper and a pencil and take notes during the show, notes of the scientific information and also regarding health. And I've drawn a box, a square, and I placed a cross in the middle of it, so it's divided into four sections. In the first section, I put clean water. In the second box, I put communications. In the third box, I put healthcare, home healthcare, or self-care. And in the fourth box, I put correct information. Not just information, but correct information. The people that listen to my radio show have come to trust what I talk about because I don't go out on the internet and pull information from other people's websites. I don't read what I talk about in a magazine. I do all of my own research, and I'm very meticulous, and I've been doing this for ages, for many decades, and so you'll find there's a lot of crackpots, wannabes, and very inexperienced people running around the internet trying to make claims, and they really don't know what they're talking about. So that's why people have come to trust what I talk about. When I'm on the air, if I'm a guest on another show, when a host asks me a question, they know they're going to get an answer, and it's going to be a well-thought-out answer, and not something that I just thought of on the air. It's something based on decades of research and knowledge. And they can take me in 100 different directions on a show, and they know that I'll go there and give them insightful answers with details that are meaningful because I've researched this. And as I said, I've been around the block. I know who's who in the world. And all of the so-called intelligentsia, all of the people who supposedly know a lot, and in a lot of cases really don't. So, as I say, people have come to depend on my information. So those are the main topics. I also want to mention that all of my radio shows are archived. You can find the archives for years of radio shows on the realityradionetwork.com and also on my webpage, which is, now if you get your piece of paper, write my webpage down and make sure you write it absolutely correctly, because one misspelling, one typo will get you off to one of those typo squatting pages that the CIA puts up over 45 pages right now, web pages that have names similar to mine, trying to draw you off away from my page. So make sure you spell this absolutely correctly. www.jmmary2cs, A as in apple, N as in negative, E as in Edward, Y as in yes, then the word science, jmccanniescience.com, that's jmccanniescience.com. And I'll have a shorter version of that. I'm procuring another, just a page with a little abbreviated form of that, and I'll have that for you in upcoming weeks. Now, just going through some of the topics of this week. For example, I talk about the electrical nature of weather. And, of course, if you've listened to the news, if you watch the Weather Channel or weather.com or any of those outlets for meteorological information, you have heard, incorrectly, of course, you have heard them state that hurricanes are formed by hot water, and they form in the summer months, and this is absolutely incorrect. The hurricanes are actually formed by electrical discharges that come from the ionosphere and attach to the top of the clouds, And this is also the way storms are manipulated, using satellite lasers. I talk about that a good deal in my weather book, and also on when I'm a guest on radio shows and on my own radio show. But the point is that this summer, 2006, we've had record heat. And so the question is, if heat and record temperatures are the source of hurricanes, as you've heard from the mainstream scientists, then where are all the hurricanes? Because we really haven't had any. This week we've had just, what, the fourth minor tropical storm of the year. Certainly nothing to write home about, and certainly nothing like the prediction that this year would be a tremendous hurricane year. Last year, of course, was a tremendous hurricane year because there were many manipulated storms last year. Katrina, Rita, Wilma, a very long list of storms in last year's, the 2005 season. In fact, the storms actually started far into the winter, early in the season, and lasted well into the winter season afterwards. But this year, there really aren't any. One of the things I do is predict based on celestial electrical alignments when the storms might occur, etc., and when there might be optimal times for hurricane development. So, and you can also read about that in both the Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book and in the weather book. So, and it also gives the method for my predictions. It shows how to calculate and associate the various electrical alignments in the solar system. But the question, as I said, with all the heat, the tremendous heat wave that we are having over the North American continent and around the northern hemisphere this year, where are all the hurricanes? And the answer is there are none. The answer is that hurricanes do not form from warm water. It has absolutely nothing to do with hurricane formation. But that's what you will hear on the internet. That's what you'll hear on weather.com. I just saw CNN the other day posted on the front page of the CNN.com homepage, how do hurricanes form? And they went through the same absolutely totally incorrect concept of hurricane development, and they showed the heat rising off the ocean and making the cloud spin. And that's all great in a picture or animation, but reality is that heat from the ocean has absolutely nothing to do with hurricane formation. And one can do a very basic calculation. In fact, a fourth grader could do this. Calculate the heat loss, and these are very measurable from satellite data. Measure the heat loss from the ocean, from the temperature of the ocean before the hurricane passes and then after, and you will find that there is absolutely not enough energy given off by the ocean to fuel a hurricane. So just from an energy conservation point of view, the theory of warm water hurricane development is absolutely ridiculous. And you can say this all day to scientists, whether they're from NASA, whether they're from NOAA, the National Oceanic and Aeronautic Administration, supposedly the top scientists in our country, and they're dealing with absolutely incorrect theories, when, of course, how can they predict the weather if they don't know what causes the weather? Now, there was a great example of an electrical solar flare activity that caused tropical storms, and this occurred actually on July 9th of this year, 2006. The sun let out a pretty good burp of electrical energy. It was a CME, a coronal mass ejection, and the majority of the energy from that burst from the sun went quite a ways away from Earth. In other words, we were not in the path of that discharge. But what is interesting is a number of days later, we had a flurry of very severe storm activity around the Earth, including a hurricane that developed in the Pacific called, I believe it was called Daniel. and moved out westerly for a bit of a couple days and then diminished. But the point is that you can actually see in the satellite data the bursts of energy coming by Earth. You can see the reaction of the Earth in building up storm activity, and then the diminishing of these storms when that burst of energy goes by the Earth. Once again, my weather book goes into detail on how this energy transforms from outer space passing electrical energy to come down to the surface of the Earth and generate storm electrical storms. I start out the weather book, the Principia Meteorologia, the Physics of Sun-Earth Weather. I start out that book, which is extensive, well-documented, well-illustrated book. I start out by talking about what Earth weather would be like if we did not have an electrical component. Because, as I've said many times, the sun puts out far more electrical energy than it puts out in the form of light. Although all the meteorological models, the computer models that give you your weather information, do not include that as a factor at all. You find a lot of the meetings, the American Geophysical Union meetings, which I attend regularly, the other scientific meetings, there are many scientists starting to ask questions regarding the electrical nature of the solar system, but they're just starting to ask questions, and by no means have they incorporated the electrical conditions in the solar system like I have in my work and in my documentation and in my books. But the point is that this storm on July 9th sent out a fairly significant amount of electrical energy, and we could see the Earth responding to it in the way of Earth surface storms, both over land and over the ocean. The other point I was making was that in the beginning of the weather book, I talk about what Earth weather would be like if there were no electrical component. Earth weather would be very bland. There wouldn't be a jet stream. There would not be, we would probably not have any clouds. We would have a mild haze in the atmosphere, and it would just hang there and would respond on a daily basis to the heating and cooling that goes on a daily basis. There's another giant misnomer in the scientific world, something called global warming. The heat wave that we're experiencing right now in the Northern Hemisphere could in no way be caused by global warming. Obviously, the sun is a far greater controller of our atmosphere temperature, weather, heat content, etc. And you find that our greatest supposedly scientists are mixing up terms. They measure the temperature and talk about the increase in temperature and say that's global warming or global heating. Heat and temperature are two very different terms because heat content is related to humidity and all kinds of other factors that they don't even measure ever, let alone include it in their studies. So isn't it ridiculous that scientists, supposedly well-trained PhDs, hundreds if not thousands of them, working under government contracts, mix up two very simple but very different terms, heat and temperature. Every week, I'll give a short update on something, a topic that's near and dear to all of us, something we've all heard about, something I know people tune in to me to listen and get updated information. It's a little term called Planet X, and a very misunderstood term, a very abused term, a term over which tremendous government disinformation programs have been sponsored. And there's a lot of people that try and jump on these terms on the internet and distort it. There are people who are paid to distort the term Planet X. And so every week I'll try and give a bit of information, either interpretation of what's going on this week in science or in the world or in the heavens. And as I've said before, I don't predict dates. You'll find that the government disinformation programs, the first thing they do is start predicting dates. And then when those dates come and go and nobody experiences this Planet X object, then that's a good way to make people stop thinking about it. But there are objects out there. I call them extra solar system objects. There are many of them, not just one, and we don't have the schedule on all of these. In fact, we have very little information. And it turns out that long before any of the current waves of or fads regarding Planet X, I was dealing with the study of extrasolar system objects as a standard part of my research. And we can go all the way back to, say, a guy named Velikovsky. We can go back to Ignatius Donnelly in the 1800s. And there are people who've recognized that catastrophes do come from outer space, and it's not caused by something crashing into Earth. It's something that passes by Earth. And what I've done is realized that many of the effects are gravitational. There are effects which are electrical, and my work explains these in great detail. Not a hand-waving, oh, this is just caused by electrical conditions. In fact, you find a lot of imposters out there trying to make claims that electricity explains everything in the cosmos, and you'll find that these people are internet wannabe hoaxers, people with no scientific background. And once again, on the scientific topic of Planet X, people have been associating the demise of the Earth and past episodes and in expected future episodes with something from up there, from above. And the disinformation crew, their job is to keep you looking down here, so you don't happen to notice or think about anything up there. There are people who have PhDs in disinformation, and their entire job for the past number, at least the past 10 to 12 years for some of them, has been to design and implement and execute disinformation programs to keep the public from looking up and thinking about things in the heavens. We find that the ancient text, the Colbran Bible, for example, I was the recipient of one of the first three copies that came into the United States, and it was given to me to do my research and to explain to the owners of this book. Once again, you find the disinformation crew, as soon as the Colbran became popular, I popularized it and included it on many shows, radio shows, and talking about it, the disinformation crew had to get in there, get a copy, and start selling imitation bogus copies on the internet, clouding the story, masking it. And so if you see a Colbran, for example, and it's got a big orange planet looking thing on the cover, it's a total imitation disinformation crew substitute. It's not the real Colbran. So be advised that there, everything that comes out just almost immediately gets changed, altered. And there again, that's why people listen to my show, because they know that when I talk about the Colbran, I have the real Colbran. And that's what I talk about, that's what I've researched, and that's the information that I pass on to you. Not some phony imitation version that is a result of hoaxers and disinformation crew tactics. So with that in mind, every week I will give a review of something going on with Planet X. And so this week I want to talk about a comet called Hale-Bopp that occurred back in the 90s. And possibly some of you remember the web page that I had back then with some other people, which is defunct now. It is out of commission. It was called the Millennium Group. And unfortunately, the group has abandoned. But my work, I've built my own homepage, the jmcanneyscience.com homepage. And it is now the center of my work. But back in the old days of Hale-Bopp, it was very interesting, because Hale-Bopp was at first considered by some in the scientific community, in the standard scientific community, to be potentially the object of the Old Testament called Wormwood. And we may remember that a guy named Malachi Martin, who was also a regular guest on the old Art Bell show when it was Art Bell prior to the current Coast to Coast AM, but was interviewed regularly by Art Bell before Father Malachi Martin. We all believe he was murdered. But he had access to information from the Vatican, and we all know the Vatican built an astronomical telescope in Arizona very quickly when Hale-Bopp showed up, and that telescope was built to view comets. Now, there's something very specific about a telescope designed to observe comets. They're very different than planets or stars or galaxies. Comets are big, diffuse, very low light level objects up in the sky. They do not follow planetary or stellar motions when you're trying to track them with an Earth-based telescope. So the tracking mechanism is totally different than one you would use for other types of astronomical research. Very interesting that the Vatican built a telescope back in the mid-90s to observe Hale-Bopp. And the question they gave to the professional astronomers who staffed their observatory, which still exists in Arizona, the request that the Vatican gave to the professional astronomers was to find out if Hale-Bopp could possibly be wormwood, wormwood being the biblical Old Testament reference to the poisoner of water. That's the literal interpretation of the word wormwood. So you'll find that on this show I will talk about historical events and relate them to modern events and to modern scientific maneuverings, you might call them, to keep the public from understanding what Hale-Bopp is all about. I talk about the fact that comets certainly are not dirty snowballs. Hale-Bopp was a medium-sized comet with a nucleus estimated, my estimation, with a nucleus the size approximately of Earth's moon. If it would have come close to us, it could have caused a tremendous amount of damage, both by tidal interactions, gravitational interactions, and electrical interactions. Plus, we could have experienced a tremendous pollution event. When Hale-Bopp was first discovered, the official discovery, that is, it was on a near collision course with Earth, but over the next couple years, it lost about 3 months' time due to the tail drag of the large comet, and it missed Earth. Earth was about 3 months ahead of its orbit of where it could have been if the comet had not lost that energy, velocity, whatever you want to call it, coming into the solar system. And as it came through passage to the inner solar system, it could have been a very devastating event. It was not. It was actually just a mild light show up in the sky, but a good indicator of what can happen. So the Hopi Indians believed that Hale-Bopp was the Blue Kachina or precursor to another larger object called, in their vernacular, a different object, but basically what we refer to as the Planet X. But remember, there are many Planet X's out there, not just one. Astronomers do not have a good handle on any of these, and they certainly cannot tell you with confidence that there are none that would ever come in and do damage to Earth. The basic thing I always say is that man must use his resources wisely, and we are certainly not doing that. We are wasting resources on petty earth wars, on driving SUVs and gas-guzzling automobiles, driving to work every day, thinking that we're somehow maintaining the status quo or getting ahead, when in reality we have very little time and resources, and these resources must be directed at getting man into outer space if we are going to survive as a species. Just quickly, I'm going to give a Popocatepetl update. Popocatepetl is a volcano outside of Mexico City. I've been watching this for a very long time. In fact, I used to live underneath the plume or the dome of that volcano or nearby in Mexico City for a bit of time in my younger years. And at that time, it was not active at all. Right now, it is becoming somewhat active. On July 25th, it sent out a tremendous plume and then quieted down again. That plume was ash, dust, steam, sulfur. And once again, on July 28th, there was a series of about 2 or 3 days of a minor event in that volcano. The reason I watch Popo is because it is central to the American continents. It divides the North and the South American plates. It is one of the largest volcanoes in the North American and South American Cordillera, which divides the mountain range, which eventually ends up in the Ring of Fire, the volcanic earthquake region that rims the Pacific and then stretches through Central America all the way down to Antarctica. Now, just a quick list of science topics that I cover on this show. For those who are new, I'll go through this very quickly. The science of the many Planet X objects. If there is any information on extra solar system objects, large comets, etc., that potentially could affect Earth, affect the Sun, which would in turn affect our weather, etc. Also, the electrical solar system, the electrical nature of the solar system, electrical space travel. I've developed 2 different propulsion systems based on electromagnetic principles for moving through outer space. Talk about comets, the true nature of comets, the formation of the planets, the origin of the universe, the fact that the Big Bang is a myth, the axioms of astronomy that I've coined that term to refer to the incorrect theories, basic theories of astronomy and astrophysics, government-controlled science. I talk about space and Earth weather, the true story of global warming and that this is due to the sun, not man-made causes, and also the fact that we have to stop burning oil because we're polluting the Earth. That would be the primary reason. The fact that oil comes from outer space, it is not a fossil fuel. There are so many myths floating around. As I said, a lot of the political activity that you see today in the world, the wars over oil are ridiculous because there is literally oil over the entire Earth. Much of the history of man is so terribly distorted because of the need of controlling entities on this planet to control the public, to for example, with the case of oil, we don't need to fight wars in the Mideast for oil. It's everywhere, but it turns out to be a tremendously profitable business for shipping, for the movement of that oil, and also to keep the oil in the ground. A lot of people think that the wars in the Mideast and Iraq are to gain access to oil. The real goal of these wars is to keep the oil in the ground and keep oil prices artificially high. I talk about biofuel, wind energy, Tesla energy, lightning, the trapping of electrical energy from the atmosphere. I talk about the Colburn, ancient texts, the Bible, and the history of man, which is much of it has been destroyed through the conversion of real history into fake history. I talk about the CIA and the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, and the false pretenses of our economic system that were started back in 1913. And people say, well, what does that have to do with science? Actually, it has a tremendous amount to do with science because 99% of all scientists with PhDs work for that entity, work for the government to keep people down and to keep certain people in power. It has a tremendous amount to do with science, scientific research. The disinformation that comes out, it comes out in so many different ways. I try to identify that and inform people on how to identify it. I talk about surviving Planet X passage. I talk about secret societies, Tesla technology, archaeology, and ancient science, and how this has moved up into modern science, where Tesla got his information. Weather manipulation. I talk about the true sources of weather manipulation, the laser satellites controlled by the United States. I talk about volcanic activity, earthquake activity, and particular volcanoes such as Popocatepetl. I talk about private space and aviation, NASA and the FAA. I talk about Russia's true space program, which has really been hidden from the West. For example, back in the 1960s, Russia had a tremendously active manned space program that the West knew literally nothing about, at least from the popular media. For example, the Russians had a spacecraft called the Cosmos, which sat on top of their large manned rockets. The Cosmos was a little shuttle-type craft carrying up to 3 cosmonauts. They launched 1,600 of these manned launches between 1962 and 1976, something completely unknown about in the Western world. I talk about health and the new cell phone technology to prevent cell phone damage. I talk about natural remedies and a tremendous number of other topics. These are just some of the core topics that I talk about. So at any rate, just a bit of a discussion on the electrical energy situation in the solar system. Briefly, when I was studying cosmology and in the 1970s, I realized that there were some fundamental problems with the theories that were floating around at that time, especially the theories dealing with the energy in the sun. And first of all, you have to understand that outer space is like any electrical circuit that has sources of energy, sinks of energy, and electrical circuit paths. In understanding this, you have to understand that identifying the source of energy as the atmosphere of the sun is very important. But it comes not from the core of the sun, but the fusion reactions in the sun are actually in the upper atmosphere. They're driven by electrical discharges in the upper atmosphere. And in fact, the sun is somewhat of a super atom. We see the corona of high energy electrons moving around at relativistic speeds around the near edges of the sun, the far outside edge of what we see as the sun. And the proton reactions, the fusion reactions up in the surface of the atmosphere, the protons come blasting out. They interact with the corona of high energy electrons, attaching magnetically, opening up holes, and outpour the protons. There's an excess current of protons in the solar wind, and that creates a battery in the solar system, and that's what drives the comets, the cometary discharges. Comets are not dirty snowballs. They're a discharge of the electrical capacitor of the sun. So many concepts here that are actually linked integrally to the nature of the sun, the electrical nature of the sun. There is a tremendous amount more energy pouring out of the sun electrically than there is in the form of visible light. So understanding that the planets, the Jupiter, the Earth, Mars, Mercury, all the way out to Pluto and beyond, the all of these objects are interacting with the electrical capacitor of the sun. And this is formed because there's an excess current of protons, positively charged particles, in the solar wind, something that scientists really don't even know how to measure. I've been on radio shows with some of NASA's top scientists who simply do not even have a clue that this electrical activity is going on, and certainly do not know how to measure it, even though they've been flying satellites amongst this electric field for decades. They still do not understand the subtleties of the electrical nature of the solar system, and that only the smallest objects are affected. Objects as large as a baseball and larger are not affected electrically to any degree, and so one has to understand the subtleties of this to truly understand the workings of the cosmos. Earth and the other planets are primarily glued together in the celestial realm with gravity. And that's why many astronomers have mistakenly come to the conclusion that gravity is the only force at work in the cosmos. Very subtle interactions. That's why I wrote my books, was to bring this information to the public, because you would never, ever get this type of information from the standard scientific community. They're a good 30 years behind the true nature of the solar system, and they're just now beginning to ask the questions that I answered 30 years ago with my original basic scientific research dealing with the electrical nature of the solar system. So in future episodes of this show, I will be bringing you much more detail, a much closer analysis of the electrical nature of these objects in outer space, how they work, and how it affects your daily life, how it affects weather on Earth, how it affects the jet streams and the tornadoes and the cyclonic storms, the typhoons and hurricanes. So at any rate, with the last couple minutes of the show, I want to repeat the offer that I made early in the show. The 800 number, 800-983-5622, for the Berkey water filter. And as I said before, this is the big Berkey. It includes four water filters. Typically, you would be using two at a time with two spares. Something that if you don't have it, as I said, if you live in a, whether you live in a high-rise apartment, whether you live in the suburbs, or whether you live in the most remote part of the earth, the Berkey water filter is something that I highly recommend that you have with you, because there will be a time, and this is stated over and over in the ancient text, that a glass of clean water will be the most precious commodity on Earth. And just as a final offer also, I decided to include the set of my books and on the 800 number, 800-983-5622. And here is what I'm offering for those of you who have not had a chance to read my books. I'm offering the three-book set plus the pamphlet, so that's Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes, the pamphlet, Surviving Planet X Passage, the third book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection, the fourth book, which we just call lovingly the Weather Book, plus two videos, the video of my talk I gave at the 2003 UFO Congress dealing with Planet X, and the history of my scientific research, and the 2004 talk I gave at the UFO Congress entitled Electric Highways to the Stars, dealing with the electromagnetic propulsion system. And those, the three-book set plus the pamphlet plus the two videos, and also included the free shortwave radio, the same one I talked about with the Berkey, that for $89. So that's another offer at the 800 number. There are only two packages offered at the 800 number. The Berkey with the four filters for $315, and the four-book set plus two videos for $89, and that also would include the free radio and free shipping. Once again, we're out of time. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.